Because when you are reading a story to someone, people hearing the story are in that cyberspace. You know, cyberspace is when Indians beat drums to communicate to each other. Any form of communication that is not on the literal physical, you know, we have to be there, all that stuff. It's just that technology can give us a new word, a new appreciation, and then we realize, oh, we've had that in form, we just didn't think of it that way.
Yeah, when I was in England and the riots broke out in Washington, D.C., I became very, very agitated. And a friend of mine who was also researching some of the stuff let me sit down and asked me what was happening. And I could see the flames of Washington, D.C. around my apartment building. I could...
You talk about the long, hot summers? Long, hot summer?
Yeah.
I was up in Syracuse, and we got hit there, too.
And I was in London. I was south of London. And so I could come up with an awful lot of it, but most of it didn't make sense to me. It was just terrible.
Really?
And finally they gave me a sedative because I was so distraught. And the next day they brought me to London Times and showed my building right down Thomas Circle with flames going up behind it. So then we knew what was happening. Another time I was running an organization in Detroit that got themselves in a terrible financial shape. I was gone. And all at once I get this idea I had to go back. So I went to people running the group and I thought I have to leave. Things were really going bad back in Detroit. And they knew me, so they told me, well, get ready. And so that night I packed, and the first thing the next morning I had a telex, please come home at once. So I was probably when they sent the telex when I got the message. And I've gone through many things like that when I was researching that sort of thing. You were talking about things going right for you.
Yeah.
I have gone through a lot of that, that something I would decide it was necessary, what have you, and it didn't show up. Or happen, or what have you.
Yeah, well, this is the thing I'm looking at, too. I like to use the word shamanism. I'm seeking out the shamans in the gay community and among the homeless, and I'm finding them. And they're like, some of them are way ahead of me. They're like waiting for me to show up. They grab the tape recorder in my hand and start talking. It's just amazing. And most of this energy is in Berkeley, I'm experiencing.
Yeah. It's interesting that where I started most of this research and what have you was all Ron Hubbard and Scientology. It later went nuts.
Yeah.
But in the early days, it was amazing, the stuff that thought of wasn't in the society. And that you could do anything like that or anything for yourself was a totally new concept. Now we have self-help things all over the place.
Right.
But you didn't then.
Right.
It actually started that. Which is probably someday a historian's going to look at that and say, aha. Here's where it all started, which is very true.
Yeah, what I see is happening to the human race now is an egalitarian revelation, where no one people or group is going to lead another, except for a short time. I believe the gays are going to be vanguard to this new age, gay rights and women's rights. And whereas in the 60s, the vanguards were African-American, the racist issue in the Vietnam War. But I see that looking for people who are going to be the first to help lead the way. And so I know that I'm one of them, but I know that I'm not the only one. I know that there are many. So that what it is that then these people who are first will give that same power, will help enlighten other people. So it's very egalitarian. It won't be, you know, looking to one leader or even one group. It's like, it's infectious, it's contagious, it's a good kind of virus.
I was looking at
and it's already happening. It's already. I mean, more. It's just like just the knowledge will have, and awareness will just dawn on more and more people.
This is two subjects, but one of them was that you mentioned. I was looking at mono God, one God has a virus. Started in Egypt, and every place it's hit, it's been disastrous, really. But that was just, some thought I was doing.
Well, yeah, and that's only taking the monotheism as a very literal, because I don't know any pantheistic belief that did not believe in one creator, which the others came from. So, really, they've all been monotheistic. It's just that the ones that declare themselves monotheistic are the ones that deny that they have other gods and goddesses. They call them angels, well, no, or saints, or whatever.
Interesting. The really Christian Bible says that thou shalt have no other gods before me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's in the Ten Commandments.
Right, right.
Thou shalt have no other gods before me.
Well, see, I believe that was taken to an extreme. I think the acknowledgement, the desire, the importance of acknowledging the one creator, which all other creations came, including all other gods and goddesses, saints, or whatever. And if you looked to, let's say if you revered the god or goddess of wheat as the ultimate god, you were misdirected. Who gave that birth and so forth? But what's wrong is to be fanatic about that. Just because you know you have the truth doesn't mean you should slam everyone else, because basically they are practicing that anyway. The Egyptian religions, they had Ra was the one chief god, which all the others came. Well, actually, he conquered the older gods and stuff. But and also in Hinduism, there was one god, Krishna, who manifests all the other gods and then raised stuff like that. So it's all one god.
I think those one gods were added later.
It's
a fairly modern
idea. The Catholic Church has so many saints and stuff, and they call them angels. Those are the gods and goddesses.
Yeah.
And in a modern non-religious society, they're in our comics, in our movies, in our sports.
So another subject which you hit there about gays leading the way. I don't know if I ever sent it to you, but my story of how Christianity was developed, the story goes this way. That under most of the older pagan religions, were mostly supported through prostitution, male and female prostitution. One of the prostitutes, because you always have the Vestal Virgins and what have you, one of the prostitutes, female prostitutes, would get pregnant, she normally had to leave the temple to have a child. And when they, usually an older patriarch of some kind would take over, let her move into their home to raise the child. And whenever the child was asked, who was the father's child, the common response that always developed, though, is the child of God, son of God,
mm-hmm.
This is a boy. So there we have the son of God being born to a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the female priest was always known as virgins. So you have the son of God born to Joseph's family. As he grew up, he was a bright guy, you know, and he traveled a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you take either the Rome, and Rome had opened up the pathways to Egypt and
right.
To India, I mean, wide open at that point for the first time since the Mongols. And if you look at it, neither Rome nor Judaism had much love, compassion in their religion at all. It just wasn't there, nor did they have any form of reincarnation or future life. Those weren't in the Roman or the Judo religion. But he did pick these up from India or Egypt or wherever he went. So when he come back and he's supposed to go into the priesthood, follow his mother into the priesthood, he didn't get along with them at all. He starts spouting this stuff about everlasting life and
mm-hmm.
this sort of thing. So he got himself in bad trouble.
He was probably exposed to homosexuality in his travels.
He was
liked it.
He was gay, because all people in the priesthood in that time were gay. So he was tied to a tree and declared dead.
Mm-hmm.
Wiped out his personality, his identity.